This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
There's a camaraderie with comedians that everybody has these experiences.
Yeah.
That are just...
And the great and horrible thing is they never end. They're just to a different... degree of, you know, I think it was either Jimmy Pardo or Brian Regan was on, and then he told me this, terrible story he had doing a Conan party when he was working for Conan, and I'm like, oh, okay, see, it's just different levels.
Yeah,
you know, you're having a shitty show at the House of Blues as opposed to the Waffle House that has stand up on Thursday nights. You know, it's just a different level of bombing, I guess.
So it never ends.
It never, apparently, which scares the hell out of me.
It never ends. It's so disappointing.
What up, Hot Breathiverse? This is your favorite host, Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot Breath. Oh, the old familiar sound is back, Hot Brethren and Sistren. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I have my buddy Guinness, my new dog, hanging out on this intro with me, but I could not be more excited to bring you this interview. This interview today was pretty serendipitous. I was at the Laughing Skull here in Atlanta. This gentleman just happened to be there on the show. And I was like, you're the guy from the da-da-da. If you don't know, he hosts Road Stories Podcast, which is amazing. If you love great stories from the road about comedians, we all have them. You know, on here I ask boo stories. Well, there's even better stories on there. I definitely recommend. But he's just a veteran comedian who has really done everything from stand-up to even TV writing and even developing his own projects. He's really a guy I wanted to just dive headfirst into asking the how and why of comedy and really making your own success. So you really picked a good one if this is your first time ever tuning in. And if this is your 118th, as we are on Hot Breath Episode 118, then you know what you're in for. It's entertaining and it's informative, and I appreciate you hanging out with me. If you do enjoy it, all I say, hit the share button. Just let other people know. I'm all about just learning and laughing, and this guy's the same way. Really got into some fun. Sorry, the dog is licking my hand right now. I probably should not say that on the microphone. But anyway, that's what married life is now. Just dog sitting and house sitting and pod sitting as I'm doing this intro. So thanks for hanging out through the end of this. I won't take up any more of your time, as I know that is our most valuable asset. So enjoy yourselves out there, kitties. And there's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Murray
pick up good.
Valeriano.
Blue Encore 200s.
Wow. Okay.
And I saw, because I didn't have like a home studio, so I just researched pretty much. This was like Mark Maron's mobile setup when he's not in the studio.
Wow, the actual one?
See, he gave it to
wow,
me.
Wow, look at that. I see it. Mark, hey.
Mark Maron on the side.
Too Hot Breath. All the best. Mark. Oh, I need... with a little heart. That's
he won't. He won't do the podcast, but he will give me his equipment.
Are we recording?
We are on right
now.
All
right. Now, well, then I'll save that story for later when we're off mic.
A Mark Maron story?
Maybe.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Maybe.
Well, that it's funny that this is actually Fontas water. Like this is. I collaborated with them on doing water.
Oh, you have your own water. Look at that.
Yeah, they do like custom labels. So
oh,
we collaborated
very cool.
On because it's a Georgia brand.
Uh-huh.
But that's funny at this hotel. I guess because it's the Georgian Terrace Hotel, they'd have Georgia
stuff. Please don't tell people where I'm staying.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm so sorry. I know we're,
you see
we're
that,
here on
that, like,
covert op.
Beatlemania thing happening outside my window.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that was for me.
Well, you come to Atlanta a good bit.
Over the last 6 months I have, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Yes, your wife is kind of a big deal as well.
Uh-huh. Well, she works in the film business, so she's been working on a movie out here, so it's been really easy for me to book clubs here and then come visit her. So it's two birds, one stone, really.
Well, she's not just, like, she's an Oscar-nominated costume designer,
yes,
right?
Oscar, yes, twice.
Jeez.
Twice, I think.
She's done like all the Coen brother movies I saw.
She's all the Coens since Fargo.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your take on, I guess, the industry here in Atlanta as you've been visiting it?
Oh, what's my take on it?
Yeah.
It's great. It's good. It's excellent for you guys. You know, brings in a lot of work. Yeah. It breaks up families in Los Angeles, but it brings in a lot of work. There's no time. I don't understand what's going on in California. This probably isn't the subject of your podcast, but there's really no good tax incentives to shoot in California. So that's why everybody came here. And then Tyler Perry has been doing amazing work for the industry, you know, whether you like his movies or not or whatever. But he's been, you know, he's got a huge facility. He's opening up another one on the other side of town and just keeping a ton of people employed out here.
Yeah, it's almost like been booming out here. It's been kind of overwhelming just to see the influx of people coming here.
Yeah, so when I first got to this hotel, not the Georgian Terrace, I walked in and I ran into this comic, Mike Lawrence, Bill Burr was here, Al Madrigal, Kevin Pollak, Joel Murray. I'm like, what? We all live within an hour of each other. What are we doing?
And everybody's out here.
Yeah, everybody's out here doing something. Yeah, I think Bobcat was shooting a film out here, so a lot of comics were coming out here.
Yeah, I remember Mike. We did a show, and Hugh Jackman was in the audience.
Oh, really?
He was like, all right.
That's crazy.
It's weird to just see people like that in person. Mm. And you're like, wow, okay. Yeah, they're even more attractive in real life.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, excuse my cough. I got the flu twice this year.
Yikes.
So I'm on the tail end of that one. So whoever's on the next microphone, I apologize.
Just about to say, you like these mics, you may just end up having them if that's what's going to happen. Well, you've been able to do a lot of comedy here, too.
Yeah, it's been great.
What is your experience in the Atlanta comedy scene?
I think you guys got a good scene here. Uh-huh. It's a cool scene. It's so funny to be the kind of, you know, especially with the Laughing Skull, you know, they do their Best of Atlanta's, just about every night. And it's a great show. But like when I first started coming here, it was very much, you know, kind of getting the side eye from the other, like, oh, you're the reason my buddy isn't on tonight. You know, like that kind of side eye kind of. But everybody's been super cool, you know. Now I kind of came around and, you know, you kind of prove yourself on stage. Then people are like, oh, okay, all right, he's all right.
Yeah, it's been, I was just actually, you're based out of LA, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just in LA like last week, just doing shows, and my friend like premiered his movie out there.
Oh, cool.
But it's cool to see the scenes and just, almost like the level and quality of comedy. And I mean, I'm biased because I'm from Atlanta.
Sure.
But it seemed like overall, you know, I would do a show at like in the belly room of the Comedy Store and maybe like 5 of 15 comics maybe did well. But
yeah.
I feel like if you do the Best of here and you saw like some of the Best of Atlanta,
yeah,
it seemed like almost the talent here may kind of be a step up.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, you get a lot of like, you get a lot of people who want to be comedians and in Los Angeles and who are actors who decide they want to try comedian and really just dilute the whole talent pool, man. And it's, if I ever see a comic on stage and they're just like, so I'm an actor, and it's like, check out. And you run into that a lot in Los Angeles, you know, not much, I haven't seen it much around here, but.
You've been doing comedy since the 90s.
Yeah.
So.
One form or another.
What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, it was either stand-up or writing or, you know, I got started doing sketch, so.
Oh, that's how you started with sketch?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you're from Memphis, right?
Yeah, but I moved to New Jersey between Memphis and California.
Oh, okay. And then it was straight, then you moved there in like the early 90s. I guess you didn't start comedy till like late 90s.
Yeah, I started it in, I think I'm going to say like 98 or 99.
Uh-huh.
But I was still doing sketch and stuff in a comedy club out there. And, but then I did that for a while and got really sick of it. And so I sold a couple TV shows. So I stopped doing stand up for like 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And then I really got back into a full swing in like 2008.
You sold television shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that whole process?
Long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long. The first one was a reality show because I was writing for television and, during the reality boom, if that's a phrase, and you couldn't get a joke writing job anywhere. And it was, when I first started, it was great. I was all over MTV and Comedy Central, and you could just, you know, you're basically joke writers, and it was great. And then the reality boom hit and got really popular, and they realized, oh, we can you know, do these shows for nothing and make gazillions of dollars. So my buddy's like, well, you know, my manager's like, you gotta come up with something to get your foot in the door, you know, or, you know, I didn't want my foot in the door, but you got to sell something because there's nothing, there's nothing out. So my buddy and I decided we would come up with a positive reality show as opposed to these, you know, bullshit, you know, cheat island and, you know, right. You know, is your, you know, which STD does she have? You know, stuff like that. So, so we came up with this idea, the, it was called Cold Turkey, and it was, we tricked people into quit smoking.
Cool.
But what we originally thought, we would do like rehab, and they're like, nah, nobody wants to watch anybody kick heroin. That's not fun. So we narrowed it down to, smoking. We'll trick people to quit smoking, and, took that around, and then NBC picked it up and put it on a short-lived network of theirs. And it was good, and I started smoking on that show.
Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. It was so stressful.
Do you still smoke?
No, I haven't smoked in years.
Oh, wow, okay.
Sounds like I'm smoking
now. I was about to say, it sounds like a little influenza peaking back up there.
But the worst part of that whole experience was that I couldn't get a writing job or writing meeting for like 2 years after that because it was a bit of a hit. So they always said, what else you got? What other reality shows you got? Do you want to run this reality? I remember I got pitched, you know, to executive produce a Chippendales show, go on the road with Chippendales for like 8 months. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to look at penises for 8 months. I don't. A month maybe, but 8 months, it's going to get old.
Wow.
So it took me forever just to kind of fight out of that and get back into writing.
Because you've written for like Fallon and Letterman and...
Not Letterman. Kind of, yeah, just Tonight Show, Jay Leno. I used to write those... live commercials for Stuttering John on there. And then Fallon, I've freelanced over there. I haven't been there for a while. And Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Do a little kind of like rewrite jokes for promos and Twitter and stuff like that.
Oh, you'll write jokes for their Twitter account?
Well, no, like rewrite them, take them off the show, reformulate them, get them into like a 15-second promo spot and stuff like
that. Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
I know some of those shows, like, I think Conan went through it, where they were accused, and maybe The Daily Show, too, where they were accused of almost just stealing people's jokes off of Twitter.
Yeah. You know, I remember Conan, yeah. Conan did that, and Amy Schumer got popped for that also on her show. And I don't know what really came from any of that. It's funny, I was just having this conversation with somebody who's not a comedian, and she's talking, and she asked me, like, how do you feel when you go out there and you do a bit and somebody else is doing that same bit? I'm like, well, it sucks. But it happens. You know, there's a lot of parallel thinking. I, up until recently, and I don't even think I talked about this on my own show, but up until recently, I had something stolen, I believe, and it's from a name person, and the steps would lead to that. He could have heard me say it. And, you know, even stolen is not even purposely sometimes. Like I remember I used to do this bit, and I realized that this guy I was touring with does the same bit. And I was like, oh, and it wasn't because we stopped touring together, and it wasn't a while until I was like, oh man, did I hear him do that? And now I'm doing it? Or did I do that? And then I just dropped it.
You know? Yeah, I've accidentally like regurgitated people's material. And sometimes I've caught myself like on stage, like, oh, that's in my head. I'm like, oh, wait, that was so and so's joke.
Right.
Sometimes, yeah.
I've done that and gotten halfway through it and then just finished it and said, that's John Heffron's. Yeah. You know, I can't take credit for that. That's John Heffron's, you know, or whoever's.
But a lot of times when the stealing, you know, writing can be very laborious and time consuming. And if you're not even writing stand-up, but if you've written actual full television shows, do you have like an actual writing regimen you can commit to?
I'm out of the TV writing loop right now just because of this work circumstances with my wife and stuff. We decided to, she did back-to-back movies, so I said I wouldn't take a job. I'll just watch our six-year-old. And then tour, you know.
Tearing the family apart.
Yeah. Atlanta or Hollywood, I should say. So actually when I get back into town, I'll start the process again of emailing producers and finding out what's coming up and then a lot of times, they'll send you a writing packet and say, okay, we're going to need, you know, 5 desk pieces, 10 monologue jokes, blah, 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 to make sure you get the feel of the show and stuff.
Oh, so for like a Fallon, they would send...
Yeah, they would send something like that.
Oh, interesting. As
a matter of fact, Colbert got in trouble for it a couple years ago. You know, Colbert was if I remember correctly, was close to being canceled. Like, he was the bottom four in late night until Trump got elected. And then he, you know, he kind of rode that. And so he's on top now. But I remember right before the election, I got an email about submitting for Colbert. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I looked at it, and it was like basically writing a full show. And then a couple of people started calling. I was like, hey, man, do you know Colbert's looking for, did you get that submission? And then basically what they did is they just put it out to everybody in the Writers Guild. They just blindly emailed everybody in the writer. Like, either that's how desperate they were, or they were just trying something new. Anyway, they got a lot of shit from the Writers Guild, and I think they had to shut down that process. Because it was basically, you know, it was like, did you ever see that movie Invincible with Mark Wahlberg about the football player, the bartender who became the Phillies, not the Phillies, the Eagles football player?
Oh, no, I never saw that.
It was pretty much their last ditch effort to bring in some writers or something, I guess.
Oh, so
by the way, it's a great movie, and I hate sports, but Invincible with Mark Wahlberg, it's a good movie.
Oh, you hate sports? Mm-hmm. You like surfing, though.
Yeah, I don't like anything with a ball.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I didn't take the Chippendales joke. It's a comedy thing. I just a little joke right there. No, that's horrible.
You were also like a ski instructor at one time as well?
No, I was a ski tech.
A ski tech. Yeah, okay.
In high school and college age, I worked at a place called Ski Barn in New Jersey.
Okay.
And we fixed skis and built skis and mounted them and skied every day after work.
So just back, I guess, I don't know, I just went ADD. I remember,
no, that's fine.
I remember hearing that when I was researching you. But more in just like the writing aspect of it, when you are like writing a show, like how do you, I mean, writing is, it's like a habit. You just almost have to force yourself to do every
Absolutely,
day.
Absolutely, yeah.
What is kind of your practice? How do you
Well, it's much easier to commit to writing when you're being paid.
Very you know, true.
And it's wow. much easier yeah. to, it's much
Must
easier.
Be nice, yeah.
yeah, it's much easier to be, oh, I have to turn this in by Friday or else I'm going to get fired. So it's really hard to, you know, be hired to write something for somebody else and then go home and write your own stuff. Or even go up and do stand-up that night. You know, you could be in a office all day and, you know, just zapping your creative mind. And then you get out at 6 and you have a spot at 11:30, you know, and you've got, you know, 5.5 hours to kill. And it's really hard to just, for me it is. Now there's a comedian named Brian Kiley who's been writing on Conan since day one. And that guy is a monster. Man, he'll just spend all day at Conan, and then I'll see him at some shitty bar gig in Los Angeles at 12:30 at night. You know, he's got a family and everything. The guy's a beast, man. He can do it. I have a hard time doing it.
Yeah, I guess is that why you took off from stand-up for that, like, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, plus it was really frustrating. Stand-up in Los Angeles. Well, I got started in Los Angeles, and that's the worst place to start. And it was just, and all I ever wanted to be was a stand-up, even though I got into it late. That's all I ever wanted to be. And once you get to Los Angeles, it's like, oh, well, you need to get a commercial agent. You need to get this. And at the time, you needed to get a development deal, which they don't have development deals anymore. That's a funny story. They gave it to this girl in Montreal. I think I guess I could tell this story. I won't say any names. But they gave it to this stripper who decided to become a comedian and had a killer 5 minutes and gave her like this $500,000 development deal or something ridiculous like that. And then realized, oh, she's got nothing. Got nothing after 5 minutes. And then that just pretty much killed the development deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were handing them out. I remember my buddy Josh Wolf got one. I got started with Chelsea. She got one. Everybody was just kind of getting them until that one kind of killed it for everybody.
Yeah, it seemed like that was the norm for a while, or almost that were people would approach stand-up as like, almost feels like being an accountant. Like, this is a legitimate employment where
right,
you can
absolutely.
Do stand-up and then get on TV. Just like boom, boom.
Yeah, those days are over. Which is good because that's what was frustrating about it. Cause I just wanted to do stand up and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I have to work on my 7 minutes. I have to work on my 7 minutes, 7 minutes, 7 minutes. And then I figured out early on, like, oh, look, if I just go an hour north, I can do 45 minutes or an hour. And so I just hit the road early on to really kind of develop out of that.
How early on?
Like around that time. Right. I think I got my first road gig within the first year of 98 or 99 or something like that.
Oh, that early on.
Yeah. I wasn't ready.
That's got to be the good experiences when you're trying to
do. I remember I had to do a half an hour and I called my buddy and I'm like, I don't know if I have a half an hour. And he's like, all right, well, write down your bits in one word, just one word, write them all down. And I wrote them all down and there were like 27. He's like, okay, if each one is a minute, you'll be fine. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I still do that to this day.
Were you fine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was fine. I broke the Booker's watch But other than that, I was fine.
How did you do that?
Well, I didn't know what a half hour was or even how to judge it. So, and I don't wear a watch. So I asked the booker if I could borrow his watch. We're just playing on the, you know, it was a Rolex too. We're just hanging out, going up, and all of a sudden I'm just twisting the knob and ping, some spring goes flying the other way. It's okay. He screwed me out of money. So yeah, it balances out in the end.
I'm sure that happens on the road a lot. It's, which is cool that you, I mean, your podcast is Road Stories. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you hit the road so early, I'm sure that was something that resonated with you, is like, there's a camaraderie with comedians that everybody has these experiences that are just...
And the great and horrible thing is they never end. They're just to a different degree of, you know, I think it was either Jimmy Pardo or Brian Regan was on, and they're like, I don't... No, it's Jimmy Pardo. He was like, I like to come on here, but I'm running out of, because I don't work these crappy. And then he told me this, terrible story he had doing a Conan party when he was working for Conan. And I'm like, oh, okay. See, it's just different levels.
Yeah.
You know, you're having a shitty show at the House of Blues as opposed to the Waffle House that has stand up on Thursday nights. You know, it's just a different level of bombing, I guess.
So it never ends.
It never, apparently, which scares the hell out of me. It never ends.
It's so disappointing.
But don't you kind of, isn't that one of the things you like about stand-up? I was telling my dad this over the holidays. It's like that 10 minutes before you go on stage is like, this could go awesome or it could go horribly wrong. And I love and hate that feeling.
Yeah, it's, you know, addicting. What
I
mean? Yeah.
It's, it's the why do I do this to this is why I do this kind of thing.
Yeah, the worst will be you may be having a killer weekend and then that Sunday show just falls completely flat.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, that's your victory lap. Right. And you just completely.
As they do most of the time.
I was super jazzed last night that a club just reopened on the south side of Atlanta, Uptown.
Uh huh.
They had to move. And I was the first comedian to go up, and I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. And it was just like, it didn't go.
Oh, why not? Like, why do you think?
It was just loud in there, and everybody was still buzzing. And also, the host didn't even like really set up the show.
Oh, yeah.
He pretty much just said, oh, we're here, and this is new, and your first comic.
Oh.
And it's, I don't know. And then he did material after me.
Oh.
Like, then he went up into the material.
Cheap shot. That was cheap.
I mean, and it's... I mean, I'm in the belief that I should have gotten them. It's nobody's fault but mine that I didn't wrangle them in.
Sure.
But it's just like one of those sets you go in so optimistic.
Right.
And it's just about halfway through, you're like, this is not.
Well, let's not let the host off the hook here. Sure, you had your job to do, but he had his job to do too and didn't do it.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, I've showed up to shows like on the road where it's supposed to be a host feature headliner, and then there's no host, and they're like, "Well, you just go up there and do 30 minutes, and then bring up the headliner." And you're like, "Oh, okay." I was like, "Do I get paid for both?" And they're like, "Well, you're probably not gonna get paid for either, actually, in the long run."
Yeah, right.
And so what? In doing all these, and I guess the podcast, your podcast, sparked from sitting around with comedians and just realizing we all have these stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on my podcast, I always ask comedians like a story of getting booed on stage, because especially here in Atlanta, that's a very popular, it's more in like the 90s where it would happen a lot more, but
really
most people have like a boo story. Do you have a story of like,
I don't have a boo. I've never been, well, yeah, I do, but it's not a boo story in the fact that it was, I've been talking a lot about religion lately, and I got it's a pretty harsh joke. My dad was a preacher, so I'm a preacher's kid. So it comes from it just doesn't come from my, you know, disdain of religion. It comes from my growing up with a disdain of religion, which I found interesting. I know I'm all over the place today. I apologize. Like when I do this stuff on the West Coast, like the West Coast really enjoys the me calling the bullshit out on religion, but they don't understand, like they don't get the like kind of not necessarily inside religion jokes, but just jokes about, you know, youth groups and they don't get that here. Like I did it last night at Laughing Skull, and they were all over the youth group jokes, all over the lock-ins, all over those references and stuff that fall on deaf ears on the West Coast. So it's really cool to see, but they also hate me calling out bullshit on religion too. So
that's,
it's kind of a mix. It's a mix. So it was really cool to see that last night.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, so my boo story was in Vegas. And, I did that. It was the first time I did this joke on the, road, and I did it in Las Vegas and in the first show, and they got booed. It's basically just saying religion is full of lies. and just full on booze, like the Improv in Las Vegas, like
every
Saturday night. Boo! But then I'm like, oh, all right, you good Christians out drinking in Las Vegas. I get it. And then they laughed at themselves and their hypocrisy. But still, that was the only boo I've gotten in a long time, yeah, ever, I think.
Anything, any violence, anything thrown at you?
You know, that's funny. We talk about that on my show a lot.
Yeah.
I haven't had a lot of, I always miss the fights, like by one night, or you should have been here last week with the tables cleared, you know? I always miss that. But people have had, you know, stuff like, drinks especially. I had one woman, I was wearing a tie at the time. I was looking for an identity on stage.
Oh, you were going for it.
Yeah.
You had the tie. Wow.
It was a long time ago. I don't even own a tie anymore.
So your wife is the costume designer.
Right.
As a costume designer, she should have known better, I guess.
This is a woman, like, you know, those big fruity drinks they have. She like flicked whipped cream on my tie, like, and it landed on my tie, but I didn't know it.
Oh my gosh.
For like 5 minutes, I thought I was killing, but they're just laughing with this big spooge of whipped cream on my tie.
Wow, you've gone through a lot of transformations, it sounds like.
A few. We're all, who knows what I'll wear now on stage next year.
What was like the weirdest or kind of grasping for straws?
I tried to wear a full on suit. A full-on three-piece suit, because I'm not going to lie to you, I look pretty good in it. And it doesn't fit me. It doesn't fit my personality on stage. It doesn't, it just doesn't work. So I tried that. I mean, I'd wear it in Vegas when I worked in Vegas. Like, if I did like that opening in 30 minutes in front of a musical impressionist, and I was at Vegas. I'm like, you know, I'm gonna wear the suit. That's, you know, that's it. And that kind of fit. And then you look at like what Vegas has come to, and there's just a row of guys in Who Farted t-shirts, you know, not, you know, like, didn't people used to dress up to go out in Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
But now they're all in flip-flops and stuff.
It's cool. You've seen comedy go almost like you said, from the development deals to the, it fell off, but now it seems like there's almost another comedy boom happening. Do you think so?
I think so, and apparently Irving Azoff thinks so also. Irving Azoff was a manager who discovered a little band called the Eagles. I don't know if you're familiar with those guys.
Heard them familiar.
He owns a Hotel small California. Venue. Yeah, he owns a small venue called Madison Square Garden.
Okay, not so bad.
In the Forum in Los Angeles, and
do they do open mics?
Yeah. You gotta get there at 6 and sign up.
Bucket spots.
So, and he just bought Levity Entertainment, just bought the Improv brand.
Whoa.
So they just bought out the whole Improv franchise. So he must think there's a comedy boom going on also.
And isn't Levity, aren't they like management?
Yeah, they're a management entertainment company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they've been booking the Improvs in Los Angeles area for a while now. So I kind of already thought they had partnership in it, but it's just they announced yesterday that they bought all the Improvs across the country.
Oh, don't they have like Levity Lives? Don't they have their own clubs as well?
Yeah, Levity Live. There's one in New York and there's one up in Ventura, which I love. It's a great club.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do comedy, man. They treat the comics well, and their showrooms are set up for, you know, the great sound, great venues. Unfortunately, they're making them really big now. They're like tearing down 300 seaters and putting up 500 seaters.
Yeah.
Which kills guys like me, because I could sell out a 300 in certain markets, but, you know, I can't sell out a 500 right now. So it's kind of, you know, you go out there and you know, I always joke, the crowd's like, oh, this is really nice, and it's packed. And then they look behind them and go, oh, no, there's still 300 seats back there.
Yeah, that's why, like, a Laughing Skull is so nice.
Yeah,
it's
those
like
are great.
85 people.
Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah. I've been trying to, when I go out on the road, find podcast listeners or people who just have been following my career and do the weekend at, you know, the Punchline or the Comedy Store or whatever, and then get a little theater like Laughing Skull size on like a Wednesday or a Sunday, and just kind of just get a local comic to open and help promote it and do all the social media around that town and then do an extra night there where it's just you.
Oh.
It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you do that this week with Punchline? Did you?
Yeah, no, the Punchline called me by themselves.
Oh, okay,
but,
cool.
Yeah, they're really good. Marcy's super sweet to me over there.
Yeah, and she's great.
She knows I've been back and forth for the last 6 months, so she's called me like six times, like, can you be here in an hour? I'm like, well, I'm actually in Los Angeles this week, so not to know.
What about your podcast? Do you ever, have you tried to even do like a tour, like live?
I haven't done tours, but yeah. We have the Los Angeles Podcast Festival. I've done that every year for 7 years. I've done Comic-Cons, just random live shows around town. My network, All Things Comedy, just did the first festival in Phoenix a couple months ago. It was all podcasts and stand-up, and that was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So doing them live's fun because you just get comics on and riffing and having a good time.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with All Things Comedy. I mean, like Bill Burrs is on there. I think Bert Kreischer's is on
there. Yeah, Bert's on there. Bill owns it. Bill and Al Madrigal started it.
Okay.
So, and then it just kind of, they've really developed it. We're getting new studios when we get back into town, and it's a lot. It's really, going with that network work has really benefited me a lot. I turned down a lot of networks early on because they wanted to own everything. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to, I mean, I've known Hardwick forever, and we were talking to him about doing it on Nerdist, and at that time, I think they owned like 70% of the show or something like that, or his powers that be did. And so I was like, I don't want to do that, man. The reason I got into podcasting, I'm a huge advocate of podcasting, is it's guerrilla radio. There's no, it's not FCC. You know, you don't have to, you can say whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. And then once you start getting a network and advertising, then you got to answer to somebody and then you got to make your numbers. And it just takes that whole freedom out of it. So this net with All Things Comedy was like, hey, listen, this is what we offer. Use whatever you want. You want to advertise, get your own advertisers. You want to use our advertisers, use our advertisers. You don't want to use any advertisers, don't use any advertisers. You know, we're all just comics building our own stuff and owning it. So it's been great.
If you use their advertisers, I guess they get a percentage of that revenue, and then you get part of it, I guess.
Yeah. So they'll call me and be like, hey, we got the, you know, we got a third, like, we don't even have to read it. You know, Tom Segura read, you know, 30 seconds of this. We're giving it all the podcast. If you guys want to air it on your show, go for it. Here's, you know, what we'll make off of it. If you don't, that's fine too.
Whoa.
So many people kind of do that back and forth.
Is your payment percentage based on your number of listeners?
No, I think it's a flat across.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because podcasting is another industry that seems to be booming right now.
Yeah.
And there are ways to monetize it, and that's something I'm leaning into. I've been doing this one probably, I've been doing it over 100 episodes. Uh-huh. I have like 100, as of this week, it's 117.
Okay, great.
So I'm more looking to see how I can start to leverage it more.
Sure.
You know, and I have like a water sponsor, mm-hmm. Fontys, but
absolutely.
Money is great.
Yeah. Well, look, man, don't knock money sponsors. You know, I have some brewery list guys who are brewers who just ship me beer for my comics, food.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh.
My friend Darcy's husband is a coffee. She just said, hey, if you want a coffee sponsor, we'll do it. And so, I mean, sponsors financially or whatever have you will benefit you.
Yeah.
Either way.
And when we're talking about the network side of it, mm-hmm. how did you get involved in All Things Comedy?
My friend Jackie Cation, who does the Dork Forest.
Dork Forest, yeah.
Yeah, she signed, got with them, and this was a while ago. She's like, you should really look into this network. And so I called over to whoever was running it at the time. He's gone now. I forget his name. And they called Al, and I was like, oh, yeah, sure, that sounds great. Let's do it. And so that's what we did. And so it was really easy. And then All Things Comedy kind of blew up, and now everybody wants to be on that network. But it's just, I think they're packed with content right now. And then now we're branching out and doing videos and TV shows on allthingscomedy.com. And I got to pitch an idea when I get back to shoot it. And they're up for anything. If it's fun and funny, let's do it. You know, we got a soundstage and camera equipment and editors.
What?
And oh yeah.
What?
Yeah, they partnered up with Soapbox Films, so we have all this equipment at our disposal.
It's like a network.
Pretty much,
like,
yeah.
Audio and video.
Absolutely. They're animating some of my stories, you know, because they have animators on hand. If they have nothing else to do, they're just kind of going through and picking out like 5-minute stories and animating them and throwing them up online and stuff. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, that's something I've thought of with like all the boo stories I have of people, that actually getting some of those animated and then just putting them out is just like little mini content.
Oh, absolutely. Podcast, yeah. You know?
But then that comes into the payment aspect of getting somebody to animate them and all that.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, man.
Oh, yeah.
Animation's a lot of work. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and they should be paid to do it. I'm absolutely. It's not like, oh, why don't I do it for free like I do everything? You know? But that is an interesting aspect of podcasting, is the actual business side of it. Mm-hmm. And just the power you can get from it, like you're saying, is you're joining this network, but now you're almost writing for it again as if it's like a TV station, it sounds like.
Yeah, man. I mean, I used to do a lot of writing for on-air promos for TV shows and stuff. Mm. And I'm like, dude, I can do that for All Things Comedy. We can put together some stuff and, you know, a little 30-second here and there. And, you know, so they're all up for it. Stuff like that.
What kind of things would you write? What do you mean? Like on-air promos?
Like, you ever remember, I got into it on the tail of must-see TV in the 90s, like back when it was Friends and Frasier, mm-hmm. and they used to do all these kind of like fake documentary-style commercials for their shows. And so I used to write those a lot and for like the cast of the network, of the shows and stuff.
It's supposed to be like a little featurette?
Yeah, a little feature. Yeah, they're like 30 seconds. Uh-huh. Like, you know, they play in between shows and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that can play into just, I get podcasting as
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I do basically writing little commercials for the network and stuff, which I'm going to talk to them about when we get back into town.
What are some, maybe as somebody who's been in the industry so mm-hmm. long and such a diverse resume as well, which is so impressive for a comedian, especially, it seems like we have all the tools at our disposal now to actually make it happen on our own.
Yeah.
Really? Like, what kind of tips do you have to maybe help that more efficiently?
Well, it's interesting. I wish I had great tips. I'd use them myself. But it's funny.
I love comedians. You've done all this great stuff. Well, I wish I did all this great stuff, but I'll give it a shot here, I guess.
You know, it's funny because I'm a little older than you. So I think I'm the cutoff between like everybody my age and up are still kind of, what's a podcast? What's Twitter? I'm on Twitter, but I don't really, and Instagram, you know, and everybody younger than me is all for, you know, is all into, knows what podcasting is and all that stuff. So I'm in a weird line because my following kind of has both sides. So, you know, my social media is okay, but like Facebook, I've had to delete, you know, 1,000 people every a couple of months because I'm packed up, because that's the elder crowd tends to go that way. Mm. Younger crowd tends to go that way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I forgot what your question was.
Just about a comedian doing it all themselves,
uh-huh.
and us having all these tools, mm-hmm. whether it be social media or podcasting, mm-hmm. and also doing stand-up, but really kind of building your own career, as it seemed like the old model was, well, you gotta show up, you gotta get a manager, and then right. they'll get you all these opportunities. Like, you can almost create your own now.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't even, like, now that whole kind of, because I was with Brillstein Entertainment for a while, and that was, like, the legitimate, it used to be Brillstein Gray, and that's, you know, Andy Kaufman, you know, all the, you know, Bernie Brillstein found Andy Kaufman, you know, all these wow. great comics. But now that doesn't, you know, and they would nurture them and work with them, but now it's like, you got to come in with something, because right. there's no time to, you know, it's kind of like the music industry. If you don't have one hit, you're dead, you know, whereas, you know, Journey had 5 albums before they had a hit or something mm-hmm. like that. So that whole kind of, oh, look, we found this young comic, we're going to help him grow and develop. Those days are gone. Now you got to come in with, you just got to come in with heat.
What are they looking for?
I don't know. A lot of social media, a lot of, you know, I can't tell you how many, I can tell you how many times, it's only been a couple, but it seems like a lot. That I got bumped for a YouTube, you know, a 21-year-old YouTube girl
wow.
out of the Irvine Improv who can sell it out for one night. And then after that, they can't sell it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's one night, they're sold out. So, I mean, there's plenty of avenues to go by now. I guess I'm kind of the old school where I just like performing in a club. You know, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I saw when I was a kid. That's all I wanted to do. I got nothing against online, and I love podcasting and all that stuff. But to mm-hmm. me, the real fun and excitement is just going into a club. Did an hour at the Punchline last night, or two nights ago, in front of 25 people. You know, it was fantastic. It was great. It was so much more fun. Well, I don't want to say it was so much more fun than the Laughing Skull sold out, but it was a blast,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
because you get that freedom and you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I almost prefer, like, when I go into a show and it's not really that packed, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, the pressure's off. I can almost just have fun. I mean, you still have to perform.
Sure, absolutely.
And that is something a lot of comedians overlook is if the show doesn't have that many people, they're like, well, I'll just phone it in.
Right.
No.
I used to do that.
You got to do the reps.
And I've told this story several times on my show. I did that at a club up in Northern California. Or I was taking that attitude, and then one night I didn't. I was just like, let's just have fun. I was with another comic friend of mine. And at the end of the day, the end of the night, like two or three of these guys came up. And I'm telling you, there were nine people in this show in a 200-seat showroom. And they came up and they're like, that was awesome. That was, we've seen Dane Cook at the arena here. We've been to when it's sold out. But tonight was like, you guys were talking directly to us. And we saw something that we know didn't happen in the 8 o'clock show. Like you're going to get, if you as a comic just deliver and do what you want to do, to a crowd of nine, they're never going to get a show like that ever again. They're going to remember that. I remember last time I was here with my buddy Josh Wolf, and they added a third show because the other shows were sold out, and that apparently they couldn't figure out how to fit the other nine in the other shows because there's only nine people there. But then I was on stage. Josh hopped up with me. We told stories. There are a lot of podcast listeners in the audience.
Oh, so cool.
We told stories about his podcast, Joey Diaz, who's a friend of ours, and, you know, all those guys. And they're never going to get that show again. That nobody, you know, only those nine people will have seen that. And that can be special to those guys. And so that changed my, you know, that was 6 years ago when I first had that epiphany, and it's changed my approach to small audiences.
And you never know who's in that audience.
That's true, too.
It could be a booker or could be somebody who works for a company looking for a comedian for a Christmas gig or whatever.
Absolutely.
And then boom.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you get a new podcast listener or, you know, you get a new follower on Twitter or whatever. And it was great. I mean, at the Punchline the other night, I did an hour. I don't think I did one set joke. I take it back. I did because your friend, Jamie Bindle. That's the episode I listened to.
He's been on here, yes, yeah.
He went up, he featured, and did all audience work, which I can't get mad at him at. There were 10 people or however many, 20 people in the audience. Yeah. And so I had to do 5 minutes of jokes just because they just all did audience. And so after that, then I just riffed for, you know, the rest of the 50 minutes or whatever.
Oh, I just riffed for 50 minutes. That's all. He's like, or whatever that moment was.
I'm telling you, it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. But again, it's one of those things that it'll never see again. I mean, I was planning on closing in 5 minutes, but it ended up being like 15 minutes of me just guessing what a woman played in the marching band in high school. Just, I made a bet. I'm like, I got $5. I can guess what she played within five questions. And some guy's like, I'll take that bet.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was just a blast. And that lasted like 15 or 20 minutes. And I nailed it. I guessed it.
Nice.
So I closed on that.
You dismounted. Yeah.
I dismounted. I'm like, it was the flute. Am I right? Yes. Good night. Boom.
Yeah, that's how that many people sound. It must be cool to have seen all these different comedians start from the bottom. And really, you mentioned like being friends with like a Joey Diaz. And I'm sure you've seen many others who just started out just open micing. And now they've become like an established brand.
Yeah. Like Ari Shaffir. I remember I was back on the open mic when I was back, and he's really blown up in the last couple of years.
What do you think is a trait of some people? Because for every success story, there's probably 10 failure stories.
Sure.
So what do you think is the difference between somebody who actually excels and then completely just falls?
Well, I think if you just fall, I think it's your own fault. You know, I think excelling are many. Well, it depends on your definition of excelling, but rising to the top, I think there are a lot of factors. I call it the comedy lottery. You know, I mean, because there are so many. I was trying to explain it to my mom, which I don't know why I continue to do that. You'd think I'd learn after many years. You know, my mom is one of those who doesn't understand the English language, let alone and she's from America. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, but she doesn't like, she always uses this wrong term. Like, she came out to see me the other night over the holidays, and she's like, oh, that was really funny. Do you ever get any professionals in here?
Wow. Like,
but she didn't. She's using the wrong term. She doesn't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, actually, that's horribly insulting, Mom. What do you mean? But she was meaning like top, you know, let's think about it. All right. If the layman could probably name five comedians.
Totally.
Maybe five.
Totally.
And that's what I consider the lottery, comedy lottery. You hit that. And I know you're not going to get better than Chris Rock. You know, he is amazing. I'm a little iffy on Louis C.K. But, you know, outside of that, you can't. So your level of success is variant on what you decide it is. Like, I make my living writing and stand-up, so I'm happy. You know
what I
mean?
That's a success. It being your full-time profession, yes, in my opinion, is the success.
Yes, but, you know, I'm not going to sell out, you know, Madison Square Garden anytime soon, and that's fine also. Now, I know some people that just kills. Like, they want to sell out Madison Square Garden, and it just eats at them. And you can get really, it can get really frustrating, this business, and it's easy to bail out. Look, I bailed out for 5 years, you know, once, yeah, I started writing. I'm like, I don't need this bullshit. 7 minutes at a bar in here, and this fucking hack just showed up with 5 minutes and is getting a deal. You know, I don't. Mm-hmm. So it gets really frustrating. You just kind of, you just got to find out what you want, how you want to get there, and just do steps towards getting there. I mean, for the longest time, I was super comfortable being the middle spot. I mean, that was, you know, I was, that the middle spot is gold,
yeah,
you know,
I love it.
But it's, yeah, also a trap because, you know, first of all, there's no pressure. The opener, unless he was the opener from the other night, does, yeah, his job, gets everybody ready.
Right.
And then they're ready to laugh as soon as you walk on and you bring them to the next level. And then all the pressure's on the headliner because he's got to sell it out and he's got to deliver for an hour. So it's very easily to get trapped in that middle spot. But, so I was there for a while and then I decided, no, I want to headline him because I don't, because it's also limiting on what you can do in that middle spot, you know? Cause if, I mean, if, you know, we were joking about Jamie, but he's the owner of the club and he did a lot of audience work and it's his club. Do whatever you want, buddy. Yeah. I didn't realize it was Jamie when I walked in either. So the sound guy was like, how much is he doing? He's like, as much as he wants.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's Jamie. Oh, of course. It's Jamie. Of course. Yeah. Let him do it. Let me know when he's getting off. I'll be in the green room.
Go nudge me. Yeah. He'll wake absolutely me up.
but you're very limited in that spot. Like, well, it depends. Sometimes you get really feisty headliners who are like, don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. Which is
weird.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
A headliner told me early on, he's like, I said, hey, I noticed we have a similar joke. You probably didn't see my set, but I saw yours. I know do you want me to pull it out? He's like, no, if I can't follow the middle guy, then no matter what he does, then I have no reason to be headlining. So I try to adopt that philosophy, but there's also, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, I wish he wouldn't have done that. But, you know, not Jamie, just anybody in particular.
Yeah. So that transition can be, how do you break out of that? Cause you can also get stuck in the box of, oh, he's just the middle. How do you transition to the headliner position?
It's hard, man. It's hard. I mean, cause you can go in and destroy, and then, but, you know, it's all about ticket sales. So, you know, as much as the punchline is great to me, and they are, they haven't given me a headline weekend, you know, and I'll be honest, because I probably couldn't sell out Thursday through three shows on Saturday, you know, and I understand that. So I think that's when you start using podcasts and social media and start building your outside audience. Like I was saying earlier about getting those, you know, those theaters on my own when I'm going out, like saying, doing middling for somebody or doing like a one night theater deal up in New York, San Francisco. I'm looking for a venue in Sacramento because I know I have podcast listeners out there and I can get a pretty good crowd in a small theater there.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of transition or I don't even know what is the word called when you like have listeners, but then they actually actively come to see you? I don't know what that word's called.
Fans.
I guess fans.
I don't know.
But it's one thing for people to be listeners, but then to be active supporters and actually
It's
get them into a physical place beyond just your headphones.
No, it's great to have. I love when listeners come out. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
Awesome.
Sometimes they wear the t-shirt, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I also co-host a music comedy podcast called Rock Solid. I'm a co-host, so it's not mine. But I get listeners from there, or I heard you on the Dork Forest, or I heard you on Crab Feast, or something.
Yeah, I just met Ryan Sickler in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
This past weekend.
Ryan's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, he was great.
Ryan's great. Him and his buddy Jay Larson are awesome.
Yeah. And you co-hosted on with Bill Engvall, right?
Yeah,
Sirius
XM with Gary Brightwell and Bill Engvall, and that was great. I would do that again in a heartbeat. I love radio, which is kind of why I guess I got into podcasting.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It actually just pretty much became me and Gary because Bill Engvall was so busy and he didn't want to do it. So, you know, we would just grab like all our comic friends, Jake Johansson, Wendy Liebman or whatever, and just kind of come sit in for the day on the radio show. And that was great. Got me a lot of, red state right-wing NRA fans, which I'm not judging. They just kind of conflicted on my social media with my left-wing.
I was going to say, or your religion material.
Yeah, religion that, material yeah. stuff. So that was, I had to stop posting political stuff because I would do one joke on Facebook, and then it would just be 37 people fighting under with not me involved at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a weird time out there.
Well, what are you trying to do here moving forward? You said in having your goals and then working towards them. What are your goals now?
My goal is I want to record another hour at the end of this year. I don't know which format yet. It's weird. Like, again, we're talking about that. I'm that kind of like great divide of generations, I think, you know, because I'm still Generation X. But, you know, like CDs. Like, nobody, you know, I don't have a CD player, but people love to have stuff signed after shows.
Right.
So I get these CDs, you know, I have an hour CD made and it's on all the platforms and stuff, but I also have hard copies made because people like something to sign. So I don't know, you know, I'll see like the opener who's like 23 is like, what's that? You know, I'm like, well, you'll see in a second. It's another source of income, little shit. But, you know, because you can't sign an MP3 card anymore, you know, so or any time. So I'm trying to figure out the next format that I can utilize that to be able to get, you know, sell something after a show and be able to sign it and let them have something, but also something that's useful that they're going to get. You know, you can, a lot of people put in download cards.
Yeah,
so
I've seen
those.
They
sell those, so you can have a signed document, but you can also just go and download it for free since you bought it. So I'm trying to figure out what the next avenue, I think, for my next hour is going to be. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. So that's the number one goal right
that's
now.
That's the immediate.
Yeah.
Okay. Immediate goal.
Cool.
And get a writing job when I get back into town because my wife doesn't want to work anymore.
Oh.
Because she's been on location for 7 months. So she's like, go tour or something right. when I come home because I miss my 5-year-old and I want to hang out with him. So go. So I'm like, fair enough.
That's
fair
awesome. Enough. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what that brings in. That's awesome, man. It was so cool to meet you and actually see you perform. And
oh,
work
yeah.
And
it was fun watching you the other night. Can I ask you a question? Kind of a personal question?
Oh, dear.
There's a girl and it's a backstage at the Laughing Skull.
Uh-huh.
And she turned around and said, you need to hold the mic closer to your mouth. That she said that to you, right?
Oh, no. I don't remember that.
That wasn't you?
Oh.
I
know. All white people look the same.
I know. All white, blonde. Oh, it was a different guy. All right. Never mind.
I don't remember.
That kills my question.
No.
All right. I thought it was you. All right.
Never mind. No, I don't remember that.
Okay.
There was another lady back there who asked me to zip up the back of her, like, shirt or whatever. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm not going to go there. I'm not getting involved.
Oh no. Hashtag help my zipper. No.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm not getting hashtagged in here now.
Was that the girl in that spangly?
Yes.
Crazy.
So I went and got like a female comedian to be like, can you help her?
Oh, that's smart.
I didn't even want to be a part of it.
That's smart. She had like a disco ball in that thing.
Yeah.
That was an active dress.
That was an active dress. Well, that's what, you know, if you don't write, then just perform, I guess, and
right.
make up for not writing, I guess.
I guess.
But that's the thing most comedians overlook is the act, like, writing is king, in my opinion. At the end of the day, like, if it doesn't have, like, the foundation, you can put whatever dance around it, but
you've
got to have structure.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
It just seems a lot of people overlook that aspect of actually having to write material and develop it and refine it. As opposed, I'll just go up there and be conversational and cool.
Right.
And wink at them and it'll all be fine.
And wear a hoodie.
Yeah, which some people actually can get away with.
Sure.
But I think with longevity.
Yeah, no, you need to know the rules before you can break them, to use an old term. So you need that basis of an act. And then what's that old Bill Hicks adage? He said, the act is what you go to when you have nothing else to talk about.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Which is, it's kind of like, that's what I've really adopted lately. It's just, okay, I know I've got an hour and a half up to 2 hours worth of material. I can go to that anytime I want.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just barge out of the gates and see where this leads. You know,
will you do pen to paper still? Do you still have that routine? Are you daily with that?
Not daily, but, I should be. I should be daily. I've tried to utilize a couple of different, like my buddy Matt Fulcheron. He's like, oh, I get up, I write, just write three pages, no matter what, just free form. Mm-hmm. Tried that for a while. Then Mike Palasak will get off stage and just, I hope I'm not blowing any of his secrets, but he'll like right after his set and just start writing. Because I don't know about you, but I'm mostly inspired right after a set.
Very true.
Right after a set. And that's when if there's any advice I can give, and I should probably take more of myself, is that's when you record every set and you listen to it. And then, because you're still, and listen, I know listening to your set blows.
Totally.
I mean, you can kill in front of 200 people, but your recorder is not set up to record that, so it's going to sound terrible. But just, you know, just put your emotions aside and listen, because you, when you're in that space, you can really come up with more tags, I think.
Yeah, listening is really writing. I found new punchlines and just listening back on sets.
Absolutely.
But it's a habit that it's hard to start, but it's easy to break.
Oh, absolutely.
So
for sure.
That, I agree with that. It is very helpful, even though I should do it more, like every comedian says.
I know. And I riff a lot too, so I have to have to record. And I mean, I've been on stage 20 minutes in and going, damn it, I didn't record this. And I've been on 20 minutes, so I was like, why am I recording this? This is going horribly wrong.
But you never know. Sometimes the bad sets are usually never as bad as you think they are.
True.
And then the good ones are usually never, once you listen back, they're usually never as good as you think they are either.
That's true.
Well, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
No. Except that, thank you for dealing with my low energy today. You're very tired. Look, we're all just looking for affirmation. We're all just looking for compliments, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I hope this jacket is slimming.
Well, you can tell them, I guess, about your podcast. And
oh, absolutely. It's the Road Stories podcast. Yeah. You can get it on any platform. I think I'm switching over to Spotify also. So I'll be on Spotify soon. Mm-hmm. I should have been on there already, but I haven't done it yet. Hold on. I dropped a Lego. All Things Comedy. Check out All Things Comedy for any great podcasts over there. And then I'm Murray V Comedy on Instagram and Murray V on Twitter. And I'm going on the road next month. I'll be in Nevada and New Mexico and San Francisco and Oregon. I'm doing a new festival. First out of the gate, the Undertow Comedy Festival in Oregon, right on the coast. So
that's,
I'm excited.
Awesome.
Hopefully I ship my surfboard up there and
get
a surf in while I'm up there. So I'm looking forward to that festival. And another All Things Comedy Festival this year is going to be great.
Yeah, that sounds
amazing. Wait for
amazing,
the details
dude.
On that one. That was fantastic. Sold out shows. They have a pop-up storefront window where everybody podcasts from, and online, you know, people just come in off the street and stuff, and it's really a great time.
I'd love to do a podcast festival too.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'll put it on the to-do list.
Absolutely, put it on your goal.
Well, thank you so much for being on Hot Breath.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for, I know I'm kind of stuck in the hotel here, but thanks for coming to see me, and
this was great,
bringing your equipment over.
No, I'm happy to. And I was halfway through, I remembered I didn't video this, but that's totally fine. I totally forgot. I'm like, I'm going to start videoing, and then I just totally...
20 minutes into it, I was like, why aren't we videoing this?
All right, well, thank you, Murray.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Hot breath. Kablow. That was it. Thank you so much for hanging out. Stay with me just one more minute. I have an exciting announcement for you. I really enjoyed in this interview just learning about how it's all about comedians empowering themselves and bringing all of their projects to the table, and how the old model of you getting discovered and then them building a TV show around you is over, and it's now all about what can you do for yourself. So take that info with you, especially comedians listening out there. And also, I think people who are just comedy fans, I hope this interview really gave you a new perspective on comedy and just all that goes in to doing stand-up comedy, the good and the bad, the highs and the lows. I hope you found it informative. And if you did, I would just like to simply ask, please share this. Just like in reality, I know we're in podcast-averse right now, or as I call it, the hot breath-averse. Just like in reality, word of mouth is still the most effective way for people to learn. So please, if you did enjoy this, please just share it. That's all I ask. I won't ask for an iTunes review unless you want to. That goes a great way as getting us new exposure as well. But the easiest step you can make to support the podcast is by simply sharing this with whoever you think would enjoy it. Friends, family, coworkers, your Uber driver, whatever. And if you want to take your support a step further, I do have a Patreon page. Patreon.com/hotbreathpod. That's kind of like a tip jar for the podcast. You know, I invest hours into these every single week. So if it's something you kind of want to be like, hey, I appreciate what you're doing, and you're actually doing a quality podcast and not just some rambling podcast. So that's another step you can take, patreon.com/hotbreathpod. If you want to see me live, perhaps performing here in Decatur, Georgia, I host a comedy show every single Wednesday at Java Monkey, 8 p.m. It's a free show. I'd love to see you there sometime. You can keep up with me on social media at Joel Byers Comedy, as my peeps are right now. I'm on Instagram Live and Facebook Live, so shout out to everybody on there right now. And also, of course, joelbyerscomedy.com, where you can see my schedule and links to, I wrote a comedy writing book. Also, I have merch as well. But most of all, I just thank you for taking the time to hang out with me today. It really does mean a lot. And let's go ahead and land this plane. What do you say? So thank you for listening. Thank you to my engineer for keeping all this sounding crystal clear. His name is Amon Garner. If you have any audio needs, he's the man with the plan. And the woe man with the plan, I have to thank my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song of this podcast over 118 episodes ago. Wow. We've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go. So thanks for being along the journey with me there, peeps, hot brethren and sistren. And until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.